So, Peter, I'm guessing you are familiar with the Big Bang Theory.
Well, I think you're talking about the 12-year running Emmy Award-winning CBS comedy, The Big Bang Theory. But I'm not. I never actually watched that show. But I am a huge fan of Young Sheldon, which is, I guess, the story before Sheldon became Sheldon. But I don't know any of the characters. I obviously know Sheldon, but I don't know anything about the big set. No, I don't know anything.
Jim Parsons, the guy that plays Sheldon, who actually sort of became the star of that show. And like you mentioned, 12 years, it was the number one sitcom. I didn't watch it religiously. I did, I'm familiar with the storyline. And obviously they dealt with throughout the show, some of the top names in Fizz. Neil deGrasse Tyson made appearances. Bill Nye, of course, famously made appearances on The Big Bang Theory. And we're lucky enough to get some of the luminaries of the world of physics and science join us here on What If Discussed. But yes, I wasn't talking about the show. I was talking about the actual Big Bang.
Oh, The Big Bang Theory.
Yes,
of course. That the universe started from a pea-sized singularity 14 billion years ago.
Give or take 100 million years.
And we're here now expanding from that explosion.
Yes, that's what they say. And again, one of the things that we forget in that title of both the sitcom and what you're talking about is the word theory. We often sort of just take it for granted that this is an absolute. Of course, these things are always changing. They're always being revised.
Nobody was there at the time.
Nobody. I haven't seen a video.
Right.
So like science, it's always evolving, it's changing. When we figure new things out, we develop new technologies, and this is no different. And of course, mm-hmm. now the Big Bang Theory, I'm not saying it's on its way out, but it's certainly being challenged now by theories that answer some of the questions the Big Bang Theory didn't, like the Big Bounce Theory and Cyclical Universe Theory.
The Big Bounce Theory, meaning that we are bouncing.
Not like a bungee cord or a yoga ball or a basketball. But yes, I mean, there is some sort of contraction or expansion and contraction thing going on again. Well,
so okay. It's like one of those paddle ball things.
Yes. Well, this is the type of explanation you get when you and I try to break it down. So I'll give you two options. We could either continue this, or you could actually hear the explanation from probably the preeminent person on the planet working on the Big Bounce Theory right now.
I'm curious to continue with this and see how you are going to explain.
Yes. Well, she is a theoretical physicist. I am a theoretical physicist, and I think in the end probably option A would be the place where we're going to have more answers.
Theoretically,
on fire today. So our guest today for What If the Universe Was Bouncing is?
Well, it's Dr. Anna Iosh, a theoretical physicist working in gravitation and cosmology at the Max Planck Institute for Gravitational Physics in Germany. Her research is aimed at the most fundamental questions about the universe. What is the mechanism that created our universe? What is the universe composed of? And how will it be changing in the future? Before joining the Max Planck Society, Dr. Iosh held the inaugural John A. Wheeler Postdoctoral Fellowship at the Princeton Center for Theoretical Science and spent the following 2 years as a research faculty and principal investigator of the Origins of the Universe initiative at the Columbia Center for Theoretical Physics and Harvard's Institute for Theory and Computation.
Dr. Iosh, thanks for joining us today on What If Discussed.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks, Richard.
So, not a small question, obviously. How did the universe form? What is the origin of the universe? And one could be forgiven for believing that, oh, we've already figured that out, right? I mean, religion for years kind of had...
So many people think they have.
Different origin theories on kind of how we arrived here. And then science kind of took over, 400 or 500 years ago, ultimately culminating in the Big Bang Theory being kind of... what we've sort of all agreed on is the origins of the universe, but theory is really the key word in the sentence. And there's still a lot of to be determined, especially with your work kind of looking at it differently. So I'll ask the question this way. Dr. Iosh, in the beginning, there was what?
No beginning.
Excellent.
What I believe is that instead of a bang, there actually was a bounce. And this balance took us from a phase of contraction before to a phase of expansion after. And this expansion is still lasting. So we are currently in an expanding phase. And the cool idea is here that all the features of the universe, so the distribution of matter, its geometry that we see today, all trace back and all were generated during this phase when the universe contracted down to a small size and bounced back to our current expanding phase.
So we tend to always think of things in a dualism manner. You know, it's an either or for most of the things that we think of, like King Kong versus Godzilla, or Batman versus
the
Superman,
Penguin?
Yeah, or Superman. Yeah,
sure.
So it's one or the other. So, but with the Big Bang theory versus the Big Bounce theory, it sounds like you can't have one without the other. Am I right?
No, I would disagree. These are really two distinct ideas. So the one idea, the Big Bang Theory, says that space and time really had a beginning. And since this beginning, it's always been expanding and always will be expanding. And the other idea, the idea of there being a big bounce preceding our expanding phase, says no, there was no beginning. As a matter of fact, the universe always existed. And what we believe was a beginning was just a transition from a contracting phase to an expanding phase that we call the bounce. So not only that these two ideas are competing, they are really incompatible. And the struggle is to figure out which one is the right idea. So was there a beginning or was there no beginning but a bounce? And we are in a fortunate situation today that we actually can figure this out, both using our mathematics, using our computers or simulations, and using experiment. And as a matter of fact, I would say recent work that I have done together with collaborator has shown that the Big Bang idea can explain certain features of the universe that the Big Bang idea that there was a beginning cannot.
Hmm. So it's more about the infinite versus the finite, I guess, to some degree, right?
Some degree it's true, yes.
Well, it's hard to get your head around. And it's interesting because you hear, you know, the cyclical universe theory, which sounds, I guess, closer to what you're talking about and maybe is more compatible with bounce because there is no beginning. It's kind of going in and out. I've heard it explained kind of, again, expanding and contraction. We've heard about the big crunch theory, which would, I guess you'd have quite the six pack as a universe if there was a lot of crunches. But in that regard, if it's expanding and contracting, bouncing, if you will, in a cycle, then, I mean, it sounds almost like breathing. Is that a fair at the macro sense? It's almost like inhaling and exhaling.
It's not quite like that. You are right that earlier, almost all ideas that involve the cyclic universe, where the universe underwent infinite periods of contraction and expansion connected by a bounce, people really thought that it was more like breathing. But that's not true for the kind of new kind of cyclic ideas that I'm exploring together with my group. So in the old idea, what you are quoting is people thought that after the bounce, the universe was expanding by a certain amount and then contracted by the same amount. But what we think today is that instead what happens is that the universe expands a lot more than it contracts. And this is quite cool because it turns out that all the problems of the earlier ideas were related to the fact that people thought of the universe as a six-pack. But if you make the universe expand a lot more than it contracts, then you can solve all the problems with the old cyclic models and end up with a universe that keeps growing, growing and growing. And the only reason why we don't see in a cyclic universe that that's the case is because we are local observers. And so the observer would think this is just like breathing, but it's not the case.
The singularity or the primeval atom that they sometimes call it is a big part of the Big Bang theory. The Big Bounce gets criticized for bypassing the singularity. How can we understand that piece of the puzzle?
Well, that's perhaps a misunderstanding because, you know, singularity is not a good feature. Usually when a theory that we have in physics has a singularity, then we consider that as a problem. It is a sign of some sickness. It's the sign that the theory breaks down when it encounters a singularity. So actually what people have been trying to do, even in the context of the Big Bang theory, to explain the beginning without a singularity, without this sickness. And I personally, and I would say my colleagues too, consider the absence of a singularity a real advantage of the Big Bang theory. You can cure the sickness of there being a singularity by eliminating the bang and replacing it by a bounce.
I like the sickness idea of it because, I mean, to be honest, it wouldn't be the first time that somebody brought up the Big Bang theory in my life where I was like, so let me get this straight. You're saying that all the energy in the universe came from a pea-sized singularity.
Sounds about right.
And but the obvious follow-up has always been, well, what came before the singularity? And generally speaking, people have been like, well, we don't know, which that's to your point is the breakdown in the theory. You're somebody that also has an interest in the philosophy of science. You've studied it, you've written about it. And this feels to me where we get into a little more philosophically, even esoteric, because for the finite human being with our dualistic minds,
small dualistic minds,
the idea of infinity is just an abstraction. It's so hard to get our heads around, yet it's a key piece of this puzzle. How do we know this, let's call it the unknowable, and how do we understand infinity?
Okay, that's a tough one. Because, you know, the question is if it's important to understand it. In the history of physics, in particular, during the last 100 years, we have encountered situations when we just couldn't understand or imagine things that turned out to be true. So take, for example, quantum physics. It's really difficult to understand or imagine that a single electron can go through several slits, right, at the same time and behaves like a wave. We really don't understand it. We don't really imagine it. But what turns out is that in physics, we very often encounter situations when we have to live with things. We have to accept things what we previously thought not to be true, not to be imaginable. And I believe it is similar with the universe. You know, if an experiment or if we invent theories that tell us that the universe might be infinite, and we find experiments that show us that that really is the better explanation than assuming a finite universe, then we probably will first have to live with it without truly understanding or imagining it, just by the way that that's the better explanation being taught us by experiment. So this is a strange situation.
Yeah, and it's like a lot of, you know, you hear about some people talking about no time and space. And although I can say, okay, I can understand what you mean, but I can't understand
no time
and space. Like, it just feels like something that's such an integral part of this existence, but the lack of time is just something so abstract for our human minds, or at least my human mind.
I am in space. There is time.
Yes, I would say as well. But these are obviously some bigger questions, which we will follow up with you after we take a little break here, because there's certainly more to get to. Mm-hmm. But we really, I mean, thanks for taking us through this particular in the beginning scenario, or at least one of the scenarios of in the beginning. Where can people follow your work right now?
Yeah.
And what do you have coming up? Because it sounds like you're on the cusp of some pretty big game-changing theories.
I hope so, certainly. This is pretty simple. So we have a website. My group has a website. It is also simpler. It's called dancingcosmology.com, one word. And there you find me, my bio, links to my personal website, the people I work with, and their descriptions, our papers that we put out. And perhaps most interesting for the viewers is that we have there also links to videos that some of them are quite accessible for people who don't every day and every night work on the dancing universe.
Like Peter and I.
Yeah, like you too.
Well, if you like this episode, and I don't know why you wouldn't,
yeah,
maybe you'd like to dig a little bit deeper, and you can, because we're going to go a little bit deeper on our extended audio podcast. It's just click the link that you see below you. If you're listening to the audio podcast right now, don't worry about the link.
Just
you can't
keep
find
listening.
The link. There is no link. We'll go further into depth with Dr. Iyas.
Yes, which and who knows? By the end of this, we might have figured out how the universe started, and perhaps more importantly, where is the universe going? But that's for later in the show. And
maybe we're on the cusp of solving.
Yes, and I hope so. But, you know, probably in the next 20 minutes, we'll probably just scratch the surface. Thanks, Dr. Iyash, for joining us today on What If Discussed.
Thanks very much. Thanks.
So, yeah. Wow. I don't know where to start. That's
well, you can't know where to start because, as Dr. Iyash says, there's no beginning and there is no end.
That is perfect, which, again, it's really hard to get your head around. And I learned a lot, and I love how she describes what she's working on. But there's a reason why there's only a few people in the world that are working on these types of things, because they have the minds that can sort of even deal with the infinite. Me, on the other hand, it ends up being kind of more questions than answers.
Yeah, well, here's the good thing, is that we have more questions, and we'll get more answers.
On the other side.
On the other side. If you liked this interview and you want to learn more, maybe you want to learn infinitely more, ooh, maybe you want to contract a little bit and not learn so
you're
much.
You're on fire.
Either way, why don't you click on the link below, and that'll take you to the extended audio version. Now, if you're already listening to the extended audio version, don't go looking for a link because there is no link.
Just keep listening.
You just keep listening. That's all there is to it. We'd like to thank Dr. Iyash again, and please join us again next week on What If Discussed. Well, welcome back to the extended version of What If Discussed with our guest, theoretical physicist Anna Iyash. Dr. Iyash, outside of better understanding our history, what exactly would the benefits be of knowing how the universe was created?
I believe that in order to understand the bands, we eventually will have to understand all the fundamental forces of nature. So how they work, how they interact with one another. And so we won't just gain a better understanding of our history, but we really will gain a better understanding of everything that happens around us. So really, what happens in the room where you are sitting now, but also what happens on the larger scales outside in the universe, with stars, with galaxies, with planets. And as history shows, it always turned out to be that the more we understand how nature works, eventually it will lead to an improvement of our own lives. So that is what I believe in. Understanding the balance in our history will eventually make our own life better.
Yeah, and many people have said you can't really plan the future unless you really understand the past and kind of where we came from. And that, of course, informs. But these days, obviously, really starting in the 20th century and now obviously going to new heights in the 21st century, quantum physics is driving the bus, so to speak, more and more. We're getting at the deeper subatomic level where things behave entirely differently, where up and down can be at the same time, where, as you talked about earlier, you know, a photon could be a wave or a particle.
This stuff blows my mind.
And that's affected by the observer. This is something that, you know, is talked about a lot, the observer effect and how you measure. So if we know that the observer affects the results of an experiment to the degree that which we know that at the quantum level, why then is the intention or the ego even or the biases of the scientist not more of a variable than in the experiment itself?
Well, I agree with you that in laboratory experiments, especially when we test the laws of the quantum world, this seems to be the case, that we can influence the outcome of experiment. However, I don't think that this should be the case, or it is the case, when we talk about the universe as a whole. And I'm not the only one among the physicists who believes that. So to be more precise, what I do not believe is that, let's say, the moon is only there when somebody looks, or the universe is only there or is as it is because we physicists write a theory down about it. So I think the ultimate goal should be to have a theory of the universe that describes the universe as it is and as we observe it now, even to be as it is, even if we are not there.
Your job is super cool, just thinking about the universe all day. Yeah, and just
it's a lot of big picture thinking.
Figuring out, yeah, exactly. Like figuring out what the origin of the universe was. What is it about the universe that excites you? What about the exploration of the universe excites you the most? And what do you believe is our next big discovery or your next big discovery?
So I touched on this a little bit earlier that, and this is really what I'm most excited about, that we finally live in a period where we cannot just make up ideas about the universe, write down theories, even if simulate them with computers, but we actually can go out and test these ideas. And so I think that that really is the coolest part, that we cannot just think about it, but we can test whether our ideas are wrong or whether we find some evidence for our ideas. So that certainly is what makes it worthwhile doing it. And that is also what enables it to be a physical science and not just pure philosophy. Nothing wrong with philosophy, of course, but it's not bad.
Yes.
not bad that we can test our ideas and that makes them physical. And then your next question, what is the next big discovery?
Yeah,
we talked a lot about the past, right? But in a cyclic universe, the past is somehow the future. So it would be very cool to see using experiments what's in our future and whether it's a big bang in our future. So I certainly hope that that will be one of the big discoveries, to see our future being a big bang.
When you talk about the big bang, it's about expansion and contraction. What stage are we in right now? Are we in the expansion stage or the contraction stage?
We are in the expansion stage.
Well, it sounds promising, because we're still going up or out or whatever it is. The contraction, you might feel like if we were going back to a city, we're going back to the beginning.
You'd be
which
dejected.
Is,
or you'd be
yeah, it sounds like kind resigned. Of, well, you're on the second half of life.
Yeah.
You're just coasting home. I mean, what you just talked about, future being the past, I mean, this is where we get, again, you know, your head exploding type stuff. But would I be wrong then in asking if the bounce theory suggests that, and a cyclical universe theory suggests that the past and the future are kind of one and the same, are we closer then to time travel if we understand this theory?
I would not think so. Time travel would mean that we can break the laws of physics as we know them today, one way or the other. And in the bouncing picture, in order to describe the contracting phase, the bounce, and the expansion phase, which involves today, we actually employ the laws of physics as we know them today. So I don't see there more evidence that within a big bounce picture, there is room for time travel than in a big bang picture, in the literal sense. Of course, in some sense there is, since we are the past of some coming future. So in this sense, you can, in some abstract sense, we are parts of a time travel, but in a very different sense than people would think about usually. Mm.
And I guess that sort of also deviates a little bit to, if there are infinite amounts of universes, are we also then sort of talking about what string theory might describe as parallel universes as well?
Well, that's a good point that you mentioned, that in order to have parallel universes, you usually invoke an infinite amount of infinitely different universes. But one additional idea, what's important about parallel universes, is that they are disconnected pieces of space. So the one patch, the one universe, has nothing to do with the other. You cannot go from the one universe to the other, and from the feature of the one universe, you cannot conclude anything about the other universe. Now, cyclic bands in cosmology, you have a single universe, and this single universe undergoes infinite periods of, infinitely often periods of contraction, bounce, and extension, and everything is maximally connected. So it's really an opposite to a parallel. To the picture of the parallel universes that, if you wish, some version of string theory teaches us in terms of calling it a landscape of parallel universes. It's really a single universe, maximally connected, and each period of cycling, so each contraction, bounce, and expansion is self-similar, which means if I know how my universe looks today, I can fully expect that the future expansion phase will look very similar to how it is today here.
Hmm. Have we talked about how long this process takes, the expansion and contraction? It's trillions of years, I believe. And also, how many times do you think the universe has bounced? How many times have we expanded and contracted?
Well, infinitely often, probably. You know, if it's infinite, then this is coming back to your first question. There is no beginning and no end. So you can start at any point and you can finish at any point, but there is no real finishing line or real starting line.
Wow.
It's tough to imagine. We are back to the point.
It's impossible for me to imagine. Yeah.
How many and how many years do we think that it takes?
Several billion.
Yeah, you'll settle it. Yeah, it's probably not something you want to commit to, but we'll go with several billion.
Okay.
I think that's probably safe.
It's very safe. It's very safe. No worries.
Well, Dr. Iyash, thanks so much for coming on and enlightening us so much and blowing our minds, I suppose.
Really?
It's a lot for us to inject into our brains. It's we're not really that smart.
Oh, you are. We all are. But thanks very much.
Well, I'll say this. We're smarter now.
Oh, my gosh.
After the last whatever.
Infinitely.
We're infinitely.
We'll be back to hear that.
But that will contract as well.
Yes.
As does everything.
Yes.
All right. Dr. Iyash, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Well, you referenced, I think, at the end, the old mind blown. Our minds have been blown on this
weekly
show before.
Basis, pretty much.
But there's still often the ability to grasp whatever that might be from a level that's, you know, more of a lay person's level or whatever. This is an abstraction sometimes that it's hard. You know, I find myself nodding my head, but I don't really understand.
I think anytime, I mean, I understand the balance part of it, no problem.
Yeah.
But once we get into once you start talking string theory, quantum physics, that's where, you know, I don't have the capability to really follow along with string theory and quantum physics.
Well, few people do on this planet. We spoke to one of them.
Yeah.
But because this is the thing, like she, obviously this particular theory, the big bounce theory, which I, again, like if you asked me to sort of assemble this, I'd say, okay, well, the big bang theory was just a part that they took out and they found the beginning of one bounce and the end. And then they were like, but they were missing the bigger picture. Because it's cyclical and it's just banging and bouncing, banging. But no, she says they're not interconnected theories because one has a beginning, the Big Bang,
and
a singularity.
Keeps expanding.
And then we'll contract. We'll just keep expanding.
Yeah.
And her theory is essentially based in the infinite, that there was never a beginning.
Yeah, we're just an infinite cycle. But my question is, where's the singularity? I didn't quite get that. Why there's no beginning to this? Where did the cycle come from?
And if it's bouncing, you would think it's bouncing back to a singularity and then going out again.
My gosh!
But I mean, again, this is why the fate of the world, people, is not depending on Peter and I.
I need to go lie down in a dark room.
But I mean, this is especially when you get into the quantum world. That's the problem with we are Newtonian. Classical physics trained people for the most part, right?
Yes.
Matter is solid, although it isn't. We believe it is. It's just energy vibrating at a very, very, very slow rate that makes it seem. But we live and our brains are programmed in a binary way.
Yeah.
Beginnings, ends, this, that, and this stuff. When you get into this stuff, you get into no beginnings, no ends. And of course, I still want to say, but okay, what's before that?
Yeah, it's always the question. What is before that? I like living in my little world of it is or it isn't, right? It is a table. It's not a table. It's, you know, I'm going to go to the store. I'm not going to go to the store. I don't understand, you know, all these multiple string theory and parallel universes. And
it's why time travel stories are always hard to understand.
Especially Back to the Future 3. That was the worst time travel story I've ever seen.
Yes. Well, they were out of ideas by 1.5. I think. And they were, but you see the writers in those things. This is the type of thing they get caught up in because, in the end, you're trying to take a mind that's okay. Well, if they started there, they went back, whatever. But as she talked about, and this is really interesting, and I've heard this talked about a little before. And again, even as it's about to come out of my mouth, it's incomprehensible. Is that everything's, if there's no time and no space, everything is happening now. There's only an eternal now, meaning. The future, if you change something in the future, you would affect the past. We, in the time travel stories, it's always, you go back to the past, you could affect the future. But according to what she's saying, the
paradox,
you could do something here that changes the past, which, again, I could say I understand, but I don't.
We'll never get it. We'll just have to keep on doing What If Discuss and get more people to try and hammer it into our heads over and over.
But to that point, like the you know, the idea that if we were doing the show 100 years ago, right? Well, we'd be Googling guests and topics.
We'd be Googling, would
and
we?
We'd be like, oh, this.
Would we
this,
be Googling?
This do, well, I mean, let's say Google existed. You know, you'd be like, oh, this.
Is that because you just affected it now?
Yes.
And it now exists.
And now I've changed the past and possibly killed my grandfather who's going to, whatever. But if we were looking for topics and guests, we'd probably be doing like this new thing that's getting a lot of attention. What if there was something called special relativity? And, oh, this guy in Princeton named Einstein is a sounds like pretty interesting. He's working on some crazy stuff.
That'd be a pretty good get.
Let's get him on the show.
Yeah.
But we forget, I think, in real time, that these are the Einsteins of the future.
My gosh,
She is one of the people that I suspect are going to be talked about in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, because these aren't small tweaks to the theories that we've been working with for decades now as to how the universe started. These are fundamentally changing the whole idea, which generally gets you a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, and that gets you in the history books, and we'll be talking about...
Gets you on What If Discussed.
Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Iyash again for joining us here on What If Discussed, maybe a few years before some sort of prize that you're talking about. If you are interested in everything that we talk about here and you want to hear more What If, well, sign up for the What If Explorers Club newsletter for tons of cool science stuff and find out maybe what we're doing behind the scenes here.
Which right now we're scratching our heads.
Constantly scratching our heads. Would you like to know how to survive as the last person on Earth? Well, subscribe to our new channel, How to Survive, on YouTube to find out. That's it for today's show. We'll see you next time on What If Discussed.